discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. I have, over the last several weeks, of just learning so much about the human body, but in particular the female body, the importance of really, frankly, just good stewardship on this blessing that God has given us, and how so many outside forces are working against us in that good health.
Yeah, actually, I think the word stewardship's an awfully good one. As a matter of fact, when you think about our own work and how we approach it, we have to help people realize that how our bodies work and function is really a gift. We've lived in a culture for so long where they view fertility as a disease. Mm-hmm. I mean, really as a disease, that they use birth control pills and intrauterine devices and sterilization and abortion to somehow solve the disease. But really it's not. It's something that's normal and healthy, and it really is a gift. And that gift, like all gifts, needs to be properly stewarded. So, stewardship's a really good concept, I think, when it comes to this kind of work.
It really implies that we need to be a part of the care of our bodies. And so we will go to a practitioner to help us, but really we need to take an active role. And that's something that the Pope Paul VI Institute has helped women to do, is to participate in that diagnostic.
Well, we've always thought that that women need to be partners in their own health care. And so we educate them so that they can do that. Most of the time, our patients are well enough aware of how their bodies work and function that in some areas, at least, they know more than their obstetrician gynecologist does about it. Now, they don't know all the disease ramifications, the treatments, and things of that kind, but in terms of the everyday practical dynamics of the menstrual and the fertility cycle, they actually know more than their doctor knows.
After establishing the Creighton model for natural family planning, it had really evolved into a whole understanding of how the female body works. And you've really come to understand how knowing that rhythm and knowing your body, and if that is off, it can be a detector for a lot of illnesses that are occurring in a woman's body.
Well, that's correct. We were really surprised when we first began our work. We began it as a work just in the natural methods to regulate fertility. But as we began to use it and apply it in all sorts of different situations, it began to give us feedback that was really good and positive. We didn't always know what it meant early on, but we began investigating it and doing different types of studies. And we've come a long way in the last 30 years in terms of understanding what all of this means. And we now know that it telegraphs a number of different abnormalities that exist in a woman's body, and also gives us an opportunity to treat them more effectively.
That treatment has really been, as we have been talking about over the last few segments, a gift in helping women to heal. And one of those areas that the Creighton model and Napro technology has effectively been that tool is in the treatment of polycystic ovarian disease.
Yeah, polycystic ovarian disease is a condition where the ovaries are generally quite large, and they have multiple cysts within them. Excuse me, that's where it gets its name, polycystic, multiple cysts. And these ovaries do not function normally, particularly they don't ovulate regularly. Mm-hmm. And so we see it a lot in women who have long and irregular cycles and in women who have infertility or sometimes other types of reproductive disorders such as a repetitive miscarriage or something along that line. So polycystic ovaries it probably represents 15 or 20% of all the infertility patients that we see.
What are some of the things, the long-term health risks for polycystic?
Well, it might even step back for just a moment and, and just make the comment that when we're talking about infertility, we're talking about a lot of different diseases and conditions. And the current approach to infertility is to send people to the in vitro fertilization doctors, and they're really not even concerned about what's wrong with you. So they don't look. They don't run the kind of testing that you need to have to find out if you have endometriosis or to find out if you have polycystic ovaries or to find out if you have abnormal hormonal function or ovulation function. Mm-hmm. So in NAPR technology, that's part of what we do. I mean, it's a major part of what we do to be able to learn better so we can treat it more effectively. Well, polycystic ovarian disease and many of these other conditions also have long-term medical side effects, if you will, or after effects or effects, period, because these are real diseases. And one of the things that we tell our patients is that we approach this from a disease point of view, and we want to find out what is the disease that's causing your fertility problem, what can we do to treat it. So in the area of polycystic ovarian disease, there's a lot of things that happen on a long-term basis. For example, these women have an increased risk of cancer of the uterus. They have an increased risk of cancer of the breast. They may have an increased risk of cancer of the ovary, but that's not been fully determined yet. They have lipid abnormalities. In other words, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, things of that nature, which are abnormal. They're quite often insulin resistant. Insulin resistance is a situation where your blood sugars are normal, but your body is putting out two or three times the normal amount of insulin to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. So you're not diabetic, but it's sort of like a pre-diabetic condition. And usually 15 or 20 years later, that woman will become diabetic if something isn't done about it. So these are all long-term health effects. And one of the reasons it's important for everybody to understand that is because the insurance industry has this little clause that they put in their insurance contracts which say it's an exclusion if you're being treated for infertility. But these aren't just infertility situations. It's like a fork in the road. It's like a two-pronged problem. Yeah, it does affect fertility, and nobody really argues that. But it also affects your long-term health. So we argue with the insurance companies, and I would say relatively successfully, that these are real diseases, that they have long-term ramifications. And just because the majority of the medical profession doesn't seem to evaluate it very sincerely almost, doesn't mean we shouldn't be, and our goal is to try to help that individual become more healthy. And so, and in so doing, we also improve their fertility, of course, but we also reduce their risk of endometrial cancer or uterine cancer. We can reduce their risk of breast cancer, and we can get all of the other metabolic things under control as well. So polycystic ovaries is something we see pretty frequently associated with infertility, but it is a real disease.
Time and time again, you've talked to us about the importance of diagnosing the cause and treating it. Infertility can just be a symptom, but if someone is experiencing infertility problems and they just take measures to create fertility, either by some type of artificial means, they're given substances that will cause them to ovulate. They're not really treating the reason why they're infertile.
No, in fact, it leaves them with the existing disease. And to me, that's almost unconscionable. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to you with a sore throat and you say, I can disinfect your hands real good.
Sure.
But you're not treating the sore throat. It's like, what difference does it make? There's a long history, actually, in the treatment of infertility that's very much like this. And actually, it's been generated because of the insurance industry's attitude towards this. But it goes back, actually, 50, 60 years ago when everybody thought infertility was in your head. Just go home and relax, they would say, and da-da-da, you know. And, and of course, now we know that infertility is very much a symptom of an underlying disease. Just like painful menstruation might be a sign or a symptom of endometriosis, so is infertility a sign of endometriosis in women of regular cycles. If you have infertility in real long cycles, let's say the menstrual period doesn't come but every 45 or 60 days or sometimes longer or sometimes hardly at all, that's a sign of polycystic ovaries, at least as one condition that can cause that. There are others as well, but that's one of the things we can not only evaluate but treat.
it's so important to figure out what that disease is that's causing that infertility, because like with polycystic ovarian disease, there are so many other symptoms. The list is incredible. Obesity can be caused by
the sort of classic pattern. And this is a little unfortunate in a way, because most people don't fit the classic pattern. But there's a condition called Stein-Leventhal syndrome. Mm-hmm. And Stein-Leventhal syndrome has a pattern of obesity, hirsutism, which is excessive hair growth, high blood pressure, infertility, and long and irregular cycles. And so if you have that complex, you almost for certain have polycystic ovaries. But if you back off of that, let's say you're not obese and you're not hirsute, but you're infertile, or you don't have hypertension. I say, so you're not obese and you don't have hypertension, but you do have hirsutism, which is mm-hmm. the excessive hair growth, and you have regular cycles, you can still have polycystic ovaries. You can be thin. In fact, the majority of women with polycystic ovaries are not obese. They're mm-hmm. mostly thin. And we've gotten this stereotype actually developed in our nomenclature, not only for the doctors, but also for sort of the common everyday person. When they hear about this condition, they'll say, well, I'm not obese, so I can't have that problem. But in fact, at least 60% or more are not obese. They're normal stature and weight and everything for their size. And so you can still have polycystic ovaries under those conditions.
If you were to go to an insurance company and say, I need treatment for a polycystic ovarian disease, they would cover that. But if you were to go and say, I need help with infertility, they may not cover that.
Well, it's if you say infertility, for sure they won't cover it. If you say polycystic ovaries, they may or they may not cover it, actually, because they're. I have a patient that I'm working with right now who's been denied a laparoscopy, even though she's not had a period for over a year, and her other signs and symptoms suggest that she has polycystic ovaries. And so the insurance industry is withholding medical care to an individual who has a long-term health problem, which has long-term ramifications, some of which are very serious, like uterine cancer. So we have a battle in front of us when we get into that situation. We have to, unfortunately, it's become quite confrontational with the insurance industry, because we have to fight with them and you know, ask them, you know, listen to some medical reason in all of this, so that you can come to grips with the diagnosis and also the testing that's necessary for this individual.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment. A teaching of St. Paul from his second letter to the Corinthians. We are not discouraged. Rather, although our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to what is seen, but to what is unseen. For what is seen is transitory, but what is unseen is eternal. We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Just how important the ovaries are as part of the makeup of women, because it's not just about releasing an egg, is it?
No, the ovaries are, they're endocrine organs, which means that they produce certain types of hormones. And the, mm-hmm. the two main hormones they produce are estrogen and progesterone. And estrogen is produced in the process of ovulation, and progesterone and estrogen both are produced after ovulation. So it's the estrogen leading up to ovulation that's responsible for the production of the cervical mucus pattern. And it's the progesterone, especially in the second half of the cycle, that's responsible for creating a lining of the uterus that's welcoming to a new life and allows for implantation and the growth and development of that new baby.
That's why NAPRO technology is so essential in helping to properly diagnose this, because by monitoring those mucus levels, you're able to determine whether or not that's functioning properly.
Yeah, the key thing that we see a lot, although women who have polycystic ovaries can have regular cycles, we see probably more often than not long and irregular cycles, which just pop right off of these charts, of course, and when we're looking at them and evaluating them. So these charts are very, very helpful in gearing us towards or guiding us towards the right type of testing to do.
Can those polycystic ovarian cases can they be treated as opposed to just being removed? I mean, what are some of the treatments for this?
Yeah, well, the treatment that's most often given from a fertility point of view is to give them a drug called Clomid, which will stimulate their ovulation. But Clomid's not really a very effective treatment. The pregnancy rate's only about 30%. And it doesn't deal with the elevated male hormone levels, which are there, which cause acne and cause hirsutism. It doesn't deal with the long and irregular cycles. It doesn't really deal with the irregularity of the menstrual cycle and so forth. So the best treatment ultimately for this group of women is a condition called an ovarian, or a procedure called an ovarian wedge resection. And this is a surgical procedure in which a wedge of tissue is removed from these ovaries, keeping in mind that they're usually anywhere from 3 to 5 times normal in size.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a wedge of tissue out, you reduce the size of the ovary to normal, and then 90% of these women will have regular cycles. Their pregnancy rate's about 80%. Their testosterone and free testosterone levels come back down to normal, which are the male hormone levels. And so it's the only thing that approaches a cure in polycystic ovaries. And yet, what's happened in modern medicine, because of all of the influence of the in vitro procedures, nobody does wedge resections anymore, except us, of course.
Something that I think a lot of us have to realize, that with our ovaries, when we've taken substances to either increase fertility or to try to regulate ourselves, we're really messing with a very important organ in the female body.
Well, it is awfully important, but there are medications you can use that'll stimulate ovulation, and they can be used safely. There's other medications you can use that can stimulate the production of progesterone and estrogen, for example, but they have to be given cooperatively within the cycle. I wanted to get back a little bit to the wedge resection because it's an interesting finding that in 1950, the pregnancy rates were around 70% with wedge resection. In 1970, Clomid became available, and the pregnancy rates went down to 30%, but they kind of gave the impression that it was more effective than before. And then in 2003, they use IVF, and it's down to 23%.
Wow.
So you have a very documented, easily documented decrease in the effectiveness of the treatment. And the reason that the wedge resection was discontinued is because it was a surgical procedure. That's true. But also because it was associated with a lot of scar tissue formation. But in spite of the scar tissue formation, the pregnancy rates were even still higher. So I think it had a lot to do with the pharmaceutical industry pushing a drug called Clomid. And, of course, more recently with the IVF clinics. But we now do ovarian wedge resections routinely. We've developed lots of techniques, so there's not a lot of scar tissue anymore. You don't have to worry about that so much, and the pregnancy rates are one of the highest that we can get for infertility. And then all of these other hormone levels go back to the normal range, which is really important in the long term, in terms of approaching the long-term health benefits of it.
Is the actual surgical procedure something that can be done in laparoscopy? Or?
No, you have to do what's called a laparotomy, which means that you have to make an incision to go in there, but the incision's only about 3 or 4 inches long. It's sort of like an appendectomy incision of when we used to do appendectomies that way.
Mm-hmm.
And because you could reach the ovaries fairly easily, and it takes about an hour to an hour and a half to do the procedure. It's 2 or 3 days in the hospital and about 4 weeks recovery, so it's not really bad at all. They can be driving in 2 weeks, and it's relatively safe surgery, and it does so much that when you balance all the risks and benefits, the benefits come out way ahead.
You mentioned a term, cooperative hormone replacement therapy. What does that entail?
Well, one of the unique features of NAPRO technology is the ability to provide hormone treatment, particularly the hormone progesterone, in a way which cooperates with the cycle. So if you take current medicine right now today, and you ask, 10 doctors, 100 doctors, obstetrician gynecologists, can you give progesterone in a woman who's having regular cycles, for example? And they would say, well, it would be difficult because we don't really know when they're ovulating, and they give all sorts of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Because progesterone is only produced after ovulation. It's not like thyroid hormone, where you take it every day. If you took progesterone every day, it would really interrupt the cycle and would cause problems. But when they're charting their cycles, they can tell when they're ovulating, and they could do this as they go through it, and they can predict when they're in the post-ovulation phase of their cycle, and you can start progesterone, and you take it consistent with their cycle or cooperatively with their cycle. In other words, you're taking it when their body is also making progesterone, so you're supplementing the body's own production of progesterone, which the only reason you'd use progesterone is because the body's not producing enough of it. So you give it as a replacement form of therapy or an additional form of therapy, but you can give it exactly with the cycle and it causes no problems. And if she becomes pregnant during the time she's under treatment, this is a naturally occurring hormone that we're using, and it not only does no harm, it's actually beneficial to the pregnancy.
And again, with the surgery, the ovarian wedge resection, that treats the problem. With the drug that you had mentioned, Clomid.
Clomid, right.
Clomid, that actually, if you stop taking that, the symptoms would begin to reoccur.
That's correct. If you take Clomid, let's say for 5 or 10 cycles, and it either works or doesn't work, whatever the case may be, when you stop taking the Clomid, the cycles go back to being long and irregular. If you're one of these women who has elevated androgen hormones like testosterone, free testosterone, and so forth, you take Clomid, it doesn't do anything to it. The levels are as high when you start as when you're done. So it doesn't do a thing to cure anything. It does stimulate ovulation. Some women will get pregnant doing it, but it's a kind of a small percentage, so the overall success is not very good. Now, we do find ourselves using some Clomid after an ovarian wedge resection because the ovaries are a lot more receptive to that medication at that time, and it actually works a lot better. So it's not that we don't ever use that drug, but it's a question of under what circumstances you use it and what sort of effectiveness levels are you looking to try to achieve.
And again, NAPRO technology in conjunction with the surgical procedure really can be a great benefit, can it?
Yeah, we're looking at right now about 80% success rates in terms of pregnancy achievement. And the other thing that's interesting about polycystic ovaries is that about 50% of these women have endometriosis too. And so you can get rid of that by laparoscopy, usually with laser. And you treat the whole problem, and another reason why the pregnancy rates are so high.
Incredible. It just seems as though the fruits just keep coming and coming. And again, I've talked to so many women who have gone to the Pope Paul VI Institute that were just so happy to finally have an answer. Instead of just being given a prescription, they finally are healed.
Well, I just can't begin to tell you all the stories of the people that we see day in and day out, and they come from all over the United States, frustrated to the hilt because their doctor won't do testing, which will find out what's actually wrong with them. And so they're very grateful to find a place that, one, on the one hand, listens to them, but on the other hand, is ready to implement some strategies that will actually find out what the underlying cause or the root cause of the problem is and then get to solving that. So they're very grateful, and it's a huge empty blank space out there in terms of what obstetrics and gynecology is doing in today's world to make these diagnoses.
And it is not just for the person who has infertility issues. When I think of the list of symptoms that come from polycystic ovarian disease, it is so hard for that woman who's experiencing those symptoms not to be able to treat that and to stop it, as opposed to having to be on a drug for your whole life if you wanted to just continue.
Yeah, right. Well, they know it's not normal. And then trying to find out what is normal or how to find out to make it normal is a almost impossible task. And then another thing that they'll do is put them on birth control pills, which regulates their cycle. Well, it doesn't regulate anything. It just gives them a bleeding episode every month, which makes them think they're having a menstrual period. I have a family right now who is from Virginia, and there's 5 daughters in this family. The oldest one came to me and had an ovarian wedge resection. She has 4 other sisters, all of whom have the same symptoms and are not married. And 3 of them were here on all one single day and had all their laparoscopies and everything done, and they all have polycystic ovaries.
Wow.
So the question comes, should we do a wedge resection on these women even though they're not married and not ready to get pregnant? And the answer is yes, because it has these long-term medical effects that are positive. It's actually as close to the cure that we can get to the condition, and we shouldn't be withholding the treatment from them just because they're not married and not going to have a family immediately, because it's a permanent treatment as far as we can tell. Certainly 95% of the time it's permanent.
And that's something we haven't discussed is the cause for polycystic ovarian disease. Is it primarily genetics?
Well, there's a genetic relationship, I'm sure, as most things are, I guess. But the difficulty with polycystic ovaries is there have been some theories developed, and a lot of them have to do with abnormal hormonal functioning theories that are very complex. They're so complex that most of us don't understand them, to be honest. And therefore, you can't really say, I don't know. I mean, you can't really say what the cause is, except you could say, I don't know what the cause is for sure.
Well, it certainly seems as though the treatment is known. And women can be a part of that diagnostic procedure by just entering into the Creighton model and NAPRO technology through Pope Paul VI.
Right. I want you to know that it is a controversial approach because we're one of the few people in the country who has actually revived this procedure. But I do think there actually have been some scientific papers published just in the last few years showing the same type of success rates we've been seeing. And so slowly but surely, people are getting back to seeing the value of this procedure, I think.
Was it because the medical community was trying to get away from all surgery possible, or that the insurance companies were driving the medical community away from doing surgeries?
Yeah, it was a combination of factors. One, yeah, definitely there was a time when surgery, we were a lot more conservative in how we make a recommendation with regard to surgical procedures. But the insurance industry, put a hold on a lot of this stuff, and doctors didn't like fighting the insurance industry. They've got too many other things to do. Mm-hmm. And I see the legitimacy of that. At the same time, we've always been interested in our patients and what we can do for them. So we don't mind doing battle with the insurance companies because we think that some of this is really important medical information and medical therapeutics. And to withhold it from our patients is a real injustice. So we're willing to take that fight to the insurance companies with our patients, of course.
It helps promote better living, a better quality of life for so many women. When we talked about stewardship earlier, I just keep going back to Humanae Vitae, because ultimately it is this wonderful gift of our sexuality that we've been graced by God with that we need to nurture and to be able to take care of. And I think that's what you have always strived to do at Pope Paul VI Institute.
Well, that's our great goal because, we've got to see people as whole people, as whole persons. And most of what we've done in sort of modern reproductive medicine is a lot of compartmentalization, separate this and separate that, and we don't look at the patient as a whole person.
Well, but not at the Pope Paul VI Institute. That's where a person is whole indeed. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Thomas Hilgers, for joining us this time. We look forward to our next conversation, helping women to heal through NAPRO technology.
Thanks, Chris. It's great being here.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.